very much for having me here. So this morning we had this inspiring lecture by Mark Behrens with lots of new ideas centering around trying to bring suitable Shimura varieties into homotopy theory, generalizing the way the moduli of elliptic curves came into homotopy theory through the theory of topological modular forms. And we've also seen a number of prospective applications, one of which was described in particular detail, namely the hope that you can learn from these spectra something about the KN local sphere. In the process of this application, there turned up a purely arithmetic problem, which was to understand whether or not certain given arithmetic subgroups, which canonically were subgroups of a Morava stabilizer group, would be dense or not. So in my talk, you will only see old ideas from number theory and algebraic groups, which more or less settle this problem. So one of the results, which I think is the most relevant for the applications Mark Behrens and Tyler Lawson have in mind, is the following. So let D be a finite dimensional division algebra over Q carrying a positive involution of the second kind and assume that O is a maximal order inside D, which I assume is stable under the involution. Sorry. Here are a couple of more series, so that's the setup. Assume that the center of this division algebra is an imaginary quadratic field. Imaginary quadratic. P is an odd rational prime which splits in K. And finally, funny capital P is the prime of the maximal order above P. Then the conclusion is that there is a rational prime L distinct from P such that, so what I'm interested in are these arithmetic subgroups which also appeared this morning. In this case, they would be of the form take the units of the ring 1 adjoint 1 over 2L, which are unitary with respect to the given involution. This is canonically the subgroup of the local units of this maximal order. And the question is whether or not this is dense. The conclusion is not that strong. So the conclusion is there is a rational prime, which when you invert it along with 2 gives you a subgroup which has a very small index. So the closure of this subgroup inside the local units has index at most, well, the order of the units of the imaginary quadratic field, but this can only be 2, 4, or 6. To connect this with what we've seen in the morning, so it was only alluded to very shortly this morning that rather to have multiplication just by an imaginary quadratic field, it might be useful to have much larger multiplication by such a division algebra. In particular, you should imagine this. If your choice of data is correct, say suitable, then you can arrange this to be the Morava stabilizer group. And these were these higher analogs, the homotopy fixed points, with respect to this group, where the higher analogs of these Q spectra, which hopefully approximated the KN local sphere well, but which in any case come along with very nice resolutions in terms of higher real K theory through, well, this resolution is predicted by the action of this group on a suitable building. actually forgot one condition such that L splits in K. That's the condition you want because, as explained this morning, the virtual cohomological dimension of this group you'll be eventually studying is dictated by the shape of the building and is as big as possible, which is desirable exactly if L splits in K. So that would be such a kind of result which might be useful. I should say something more. Involutions of the second kind if it's non-trivial on the center. But we'll see that in a minute. Yeah, examples are coming right away. I want you to say for the entire talk would be a year. So the aim is to produce dense subgroups, and so to speak, the sport part will be to invert as few primes as possible. It's rather easy to see that if you allow yourself to invert just every prime distinct from P here, you're going to get a dense subgroup. However, the more systems turning up in the resolutions of these analogs of the Q spectra are similar to Hecke correspondences, and being able to only invert, say, let's imagine I just inverted L, that would be saying that the morphisms in the resolutions come from Hecke operators of degree only divisible by L. So that is the motivation for what I try to do, invert as few primes as possible in order to get a almost dense subgroup. In fact, exactly. I should. So that's the, and what was the? It's not the notation from your paper. So I. Yeah. Where S in this case would be 2 and L. Yeah. Thank you. I should have said that. So then, the same statement again, just a little different. I give myself a central division algebra over Q. A maximal order inside this. And an odd prime. And again, the prime of the order above P. So the conclusion here is there is a rational prime distinct from P such that the group of units of the ring 1 with L inverted, which is canonically a subgroup of the local units of this maximal order, is dense. The basic difference between the two statements is that in theorem 2 there is no involution anymore, which makes the proof a little easier while retaining all the main ideas in the proof are present in the proof of theorem 2, but it's a little easier because you don't have to deal with the involution. So what I will do is give a rather detailed outline of the proof of theorem 2 and in the end say what additional work it takes to deal with the involution, because you see this is a serious restriction here only using unitary units, and here I'm just asserting all units when L is inverted are dense. I think that's what I want to do. So here's the example, which is actually appeared this morning before, I think. It's due to Mark Tyler. If you take an odd prime and a supersingular elliptic curve and characteristic P, then you exactly get into this arithmetic situation simply by taking for O the ring of endomorphisms of the elliptic curve sitting inside its Q field of fractions, O tensor Q. So this is as in theorem 2. that this is actually maximal order is due to Deuring. This is a special feature of elliptic curves. So then the conclusion here is that there is a prime such that if I invert this in the endomorphism ring, take the resulting units, which are subgroup of the local units of this maximal order, then this is dense. And because this division algebra is ramified at P, this group of local units is exactly the second Morava stabilizer group. So this gives you a dense subgroup of the Morava, of the second Morava stabilizer group at any odd prime at least, which has a nice description in terms of isogenies of a single elliptic curve. So that's an example. Yeah, no. Now we start on the proof of theorem 2. The first, I should say something about theorem 2, this assumption that the division algebra is actually central over Q is only made to simplify, to have a nice, easy to state conclusion. I will treat the general case in which the center is just some number field. Say it again? That will ultimately be Chebotarev argument. So it's always infinitely many such L's in particular. So the first, speak about some groups, that's just the obvious remark that both problems as stated are evidently approximation problems for suitable algebraic groups, and I want to introduce them now. So let me say again, I take a division algebra over Q and a maximal order. Well, as I said before, I do not want to insist that it is really central over Q, so I call K the center. That's any number field. This has ring of integers OK. And I call D the reduced dimension of the division algebra. So the algebraic group to look at defined over the ring of integers of OK, that's of course the unit group of the maximal order. So it's given on points. G of R is just the group of units of the base change from OK to R. That's evidently an affine group skin of finite type. So the reduced norm on the division algebra induces a morphism from G, morphism of algebraic groups, from G to GM. I will denote by G prime the kernel. And it's easy to see that this is in fact an exact sequence, say, of flat sheaves over the ring of integers. So let me say that these are pretty familiar groups. I mean, these are sort of integral models of the generic fiber. The generic fiber is a group scheme over this number field. And in fact, for G, this is an inner form of GLM. Once you make an extension of K, which splits the algebra, the generic fiber of G becomes isomorphic to GLN. And likewise, G prime is a form of the special linear group in D variables. I need to know a little about the reduction of these group schemes. So G and G prime are smooth with connected fibers over OK. So remark that only goes orally. So these are integral models for, say, in the case of G, integral model of a reductive group, but the group G itself is not reductive. In fact, it's easy to see from the proof I won't give you that the reduction of G is reductive exactly at those primes which do not divide the discriminant of the division algebra. So these group schemes are a little more complicated than just being reductive or something, but all I have to know about the reduction is that it's actually smooth and connected. And that's really elementary to see. Now I try to connect this with the approximation problem I'm actually interested in. So I fix a prime in the ring of integers of k that is to be thought of as the prime at which I want to approximate. Again, a prime of the maximal order above p. And now here's an important datum. I take as a finite set of places of k such that the place I'm looking at is not in S, P is not contained in S, and I want that there is a place in S at which the division algebra, when changed to the local field, is not a division algebra anymore. It's not a division algebra. So this P says where I wish to approximate, and you should think of the primes in S as those which I'm willing to invert in order to get a dense subgroup. So in the end, it will be, I will try to get S, the set S, as small as possible. But for the time being, I just look at some set of primes and see what happens with the subgroups. So okay. The way to study these is I have an inclusion of the I should lift this up, I guess. Oh, that was a mistake. I'm sorry, can you read if I write on the very last line of the blackboard? Probably not. I put it up in a minute. So what I'm saying here is the subgroup I want to study, whether or not it's dense, is a group of points of the group schemes. I mean, this is by construction. I could just write it down and then, yeah. I would just write down something and then explain it so I can put it up. That's a nice way of giving a lecture, just say nothing and write. And always make sure you're standing right in front of what you're writing. So. So that's the situation here. This middle inclusion is what I would like to study. So as long as I don't know whether or not it's dense, I just say I want to study the closure of this subgroup. The closure of this subgroup in here. And I will study it using the exact sequence I got from the exact sequence of group schemes over there. Of course, this raises a couple of minor issues. First of all, if I enter, so OKS is the ring of S integers, I will have to make sure that this is really an exact sequence. It's not in general, and I will determine the image is X, and I will have to determine this below. It's going to be 0.3. The lower row will always be exact. I will explain immediately why. And sort of the upshot is that by strong approximation, this inclusion is always dense. So granting me everything I claimed about this diagram, so far it's elementary to see that the closure of the image of the inclusion iota, which is what I'm interested in, is simply the pre-image of the closure of the image of iota prime. What this means is, of course, that I have reduced the approximation problem from one pertaining to this big algebraic group G to a problem only involving GM. So I'm left with an approximation problem for GM, and I will settle this in a minute. So first give you the reason for why this is true. The first point, I mean, that's easiest. The obstruction to the lower row being exact lives in the first cohomology over the completion of the ring of integers at P with coefficients in G prime. This is zero by proposition 3, I hope, and Lang's theorem. So this is one point where I really want to know that G prime, even though it's not semi-simple, it's at least smooth. This tells me that this cohomology comes entirely from the special fiber, and then since the special fiber is connected, an easy trick with Frobenius isogenies, this due to Lang, shows that this vanishes. Oh. Thank you very much. It's proposition 4. To a strong approximation for the, so G prime is a model of a semi-simple and simply connected group, so you have strong approximation. One thing you always need is to use that, you need some place where the group is isotropic. This is exactly this one special place I demanded the existence of before, because you see, saying that D at V naught is not a division algebra is equivalent to saying that G prime is isotropic there. And I say a few more words about the last item, which was labeled 3 above. So I have to say what these are very classical objects here. You see what I'm looking at here, that's just the reduced norm of my division algebra. More precisely speaking, I'm looking at the reduced norm going from the S integers of the division algebra down to the S units of the number field, and I wonder what is the image. So this is a elementary Diophantine question, but the answer is not elementary. So this is exactly those S units which at every place, at every real place where the algebra is not split, are positive. Something about the proof of this. That's, of course, I mean, this problem has been studied, I don't know, half a century ago, and actually solved by Eichler, but on the generic fiber only. So let me write down what the theorem of Eichler says, is that the image of the reduced norm this condition here is that the image of the reduced norm down to the number field itself consists exactly of those elements which satisfy this positivity condition. Observe that it is trivial that only these elements can occur as the reduced norm, because if you have a real place where the algebra does not split, then at this real place the algebra will be more or less just the quaternion, the Hamilton quaternion, and the reduced norm is a positive definite quadratic form. So it's clear that this condition is necessary in order to be a reduced norm, and the theorem of Eichel is that it is in fact sufficient. And what I need to do is to refine this to an integral statement, because I'm not interested in the reduced norm of the elements from all of the algebra, but only from it as integers. So that is can be seen as follows. So this is the map, the image of which I'm actually interested in. Okay. And I write out the next term in the non-abelian cohomology sequence. So there goes an H1 over the ring of S integers with coefficients in G prime. And all of this maps, of course, to the generic fiber where I have Eichler's theorem. If you look at this at most 3 seconds, then you will see that I'm done once I show that this map has trivial kernel. This too is a very classical question, because what it says is that the G prime torsor over the ring of integers, which is generically trivial, is in fact trivial. So that's a known arithmetic problem, and again, this uses proposition 4. So say it's well known that this map has trivial kernel if G prime is semi-simple. So as I pointed out before, there are some fibers causing trouble. G prime is not literally semi-simple, but you can work around this again by knowing that the fibers are at least connected and smooth. So that's this proof. So what this means, to say it again, is that I've completed the sketch of the reduction from an approximation problem on this integral model G of a reductive group to an approximation problem of its quotient by its derived subgroup, which in this case is only a one-dimensional trivial torus, so it's GM, and I will have to explain what this approximation problem actually looks like and what you can say about its solution. So I'll do this. Approximation for GM. So the easiest instance of this problem is the one I announced in theorem 2, I think, is when when the number field involved is just the field of rational numbers, and say the set of places you're inverting is a single prime L. Then what you're looking at is GM of the local ring, so I mean this is CP star, and inside of it there is the ring of S integers, which in this case is just C adjoint 1 over L, or rather its units. And you want to know if this is dense. No, I mean this is exactly the plus minus L to the C which appeared in Marx's talk. However, I'm not happy once this is dense, because you see from Eichler's norm theorem that there are coming some positivity conditions. So what I actually want to know is if I can arrange L such that a certain subgroup is dense, but this of course contains at least all powers of L, where I guess I'm assuming that the prime is positive. I don't know, this is of course undergraduate exercise, so this finishes the proof of theorem 2 by taking L to generate the units mod P squared is enough. By taking L to generate C mod P squared star. Once you have this, you know that this infinite cyclic subgroup is dense in CP star. But as I said, I would like to explain the generalization of this to an arbitrary number field, because this also plays a role in the proof of theorem 1, where I have to consider an involution. And in fact, you can almost guess what's going to happen from just look. The reason such a prime exists is Dirichlet's theorem on primes and arithmetic progressions. So the way to think about this is to realize that CP star is the Galois group of the maximal abelian extension of Q unramified outside P, and under this map, under this isomorphism, the map written here sends L to its Frobenius, to the Frobenius substitution at L. So what is going to happen in general if you pose the analogous problem for an arbitrary number field? You will look at the local units of the number field. Again, class field theory tells you this is a Galois group of some extension of the field. And then the Artin's reciprocity map allows you to understand the inclusion of subgroups you're looking at, so the image of this, as certain elements in the Galois group. You're trying to find suitable Frobenius substitutions. Their existence is usually is guaranteed by Chaputara's theorem. I will not go into the details of this, but I would like to state the precise result. So here's the new start, K is a number field. P is the prime of this number field. Capital sigma is the set of real places. That's part of the given data. It's not the set of all real places. I just give myself a set of real places. Of course, these correspond to the places where later on I will have to look at positivity conditions coming from this Eichler's norm theorem. So this will be exactly the set of real places of the number field where the given division algebra is ramified. So the group I'm interested in getting dense inside the local units is the group of, I label XS, the group of S units which are positive at all these given real places. And for some technical reasons I will also, but this disappears immediately, I also have to look at the group of all global units which are positive at those places. Oops. So remember, the goal of this entire thing is to try to understand how many primes S I have to invert in order to get this a dense subgroup of the local units of the number fields at P. And, well, the answer is the following. I introduce an invariant G, I guess like generators or something. This is the minimal number of generators of the local units of the number field divided by some global units and the pth power of the principal units. That looks unmotivated, but it isn't. The simple observation is that an arbitrary subgroup of these local units is dense if and only if it projects subjectively to this one specific quotient. This is just by the known structure of this group and kind of Nakayama lemma argument. So what I want to understand is, in order to check density of a subgroup in here, I exactly have to check whether or not it subjects onto this evidently finite quotient. And I just denote the minimal number of generators of this finite abelian group by G. You see in the case up there, since I was assuming P is odd, even though I didn't write it, this number is 1. So all you have to do is find a place such that the Frobenius substitution hits the generator. And here you're going to have G generators, so you may guess you have to invert G places. That's true. So this is the main result. There is a set of places above, S above, such that it has G elements and the resulting subgroup is dense in the local units. Maybe I should say that even though the word theorem has a couple of letters missing, that doesn't mean the proof isn't complete. It is because I have the M. Sorry. And the rest is sort of complementary. This result is best possible in the sense that if you have any such set of places S which produces a dense subgroup in the local units, then this has to have at least G elements. Well, for completeness, there is an easy a priori bound on the number of these generators G. So G is bounded above by the local degree of the number field in case this does not contain any non-trivial P fruits of unity. And the local degree plus 1 in case it does. Note that reproduces the elementary thing about the rational field seen above, because if P is an odd prime, then in QP there are no non-trivial roots of unity. So you see that G is at most 1, and you come by with inverting a single prime. And this also shows why the prime 2 is a little special. You can either view it because you know that C2 star is not cyclic, or you can look here and observe that, of course, Q2, like any field, contains a non-trivial second root of unity. Say it again. Oh, not as stated. As stated, it just says the number of primes you have to invert, the minimal number of primes you have to invert is at least this G. And it also says there is such a set, but it... Yeah, you're right. So since I've been... No, I said that earlier. Since this comes from a Chebotarev argument, it's always clear that given any set of places of density 1, you can always find such a set S inside the given set of places of density 1. In particular, there are infinitely many such sets you can take. Well, if you want to, you can learn more here. You can also learn that inverting primes at random doesn't lead you anywhere. It's possible to invert infinitely many primes without getting a dense subgroup. Just take all the primes which are 1 mod P or something. Well, that's just, okay. Just playing around, as the following remark is. So this inequality I gave you here, this a priori estimate on G, this can be strict. I just discussed that in the case of the rational number field, this is an equality, but not in general. So for example, if you take as your number field Q adjoint the square root of 2, and you take any of the, I think, 2 primes dividing 7, and you insist on no positivity condition, then G is 0. That means that, quite amusingly, at least for me, you don't have to invert any primes. So the group of global units of that number field is already dense in the local units at this particular place. Okay. So one thing I had promised to discuss is because I've now explained some approximation in general division algebras, but for the applications Mark and Tyler have in mind, it seems important to have a result which I stated as theorem 1, in which you really do approximation not on some integral model of some form of GLN, but rather on a unitary group. And the approach is, of course, completely the same. So I will limit myself to pointing out the additional difficulties which arise in the case if you try to treat a unitary group along these lines. So this is on the proof of theorem 1. So the setup, that's very short here. So I give myself a division algebra over Q, positive involution of the second kind, a maximal order which I assume stable under it. Now, the center, I will denote L, but it will play no role. This is where the positivity of the involution. This is some CM field. That's not a contradiction. So this is a CM field. And the invariance under the involution is its maximal totally real subfield. And this is where the unitary groups are defined over. So again, the reduced dimension I will denote by D. As before, it's clear from the thing I want to prove what group I have to look at. I have to look at the following unitary group. So I take all the units in the maximal order, which are unitary with respect to the given involution. And I also have to look, now again, I want to start by understanding the basic geometry of this group. So I look at an exact sequence given by the reduced norm, but this takes values in a slightly different group, the following torus, of elements in OL, or base changes thereof, which have norm 1. So this is an integral model for an anisotropic one-dimensional torus over the totally real field K. Again, so the reduced norm induces a morphism of algebraic groups. The kernel I label SU because it's an integral model of a special unitary group. This is over OK, and this is not exact in general. Which is where the two things start to differ. So let me... The geometry in this setup is more complicated than the one I treated before for various reasons. One of the reasons is I do not have an exact sequence set easily, but I will just say what's left over of the geometry and that it is good enough to get some results. So, but at least tell you what is true. I consider the following open subscheme of the ring of integers, which I get by removing all the primes which have residue characteristic 2. It's not surprising that a unitary group will cause trouble in characteristic 2, and which is also ramified in this extension L over K. Inside of this, there is a finite set of places which may cause some additional trouble, which comes from the fact of the reduction of this unitary group. So let me state the condition. So the geometric special fiber of this unitary group is, of course, by the structure theory of algebraic groups, an extension of some semi-simple group. And there are finitely many cases in which this may be a symplectic group. This I have to single out. So this is an extension of some symplectic group. The reason for this is clear because this not being exact means, roughly speaking, that there are additional constraints on the determinant besides just having norm 1. And these constraints come from the special fibers where the reduction is symplectic because the determinant of symplectic endomorphism is always equal to 1 and not just has norm 1 or something. So this is, you see that this is contained in the set of primes which ramify in L over K, and in particular that's a finite set that may well be empty, but in general it's not. I have to modify my torus accordingly by taking out of it all the non-identity components. Non-identity components of the special fiber at this point. This is what will guarantee that the reduced norm is in fact an apomorphism. So over this open subset V, the sequence 1 to the special unitary group to the unitary group to the slightly massaged anisotropic torus is exact. And I also need to know something about the reduction behavior as before. The unitary group over this open part, respectively the special unitary group over the same open part, is smooth. Respectively smooth with connected fibers. So let me remark that maybe someone is curious to know what sort of a reduction this particular integral model of the unitary group has at the prime of residue characteristic 2, which in addition ramifies in the CM field. And the answer is as follows. So if I have such a prime, then the geometric special fiber of this unitary group is an extension of an orthogonal group by its Lie algebra with respect to the adjoint action. So since I'm in characteristic 2, this is not smooth. And this does have some meaning because all these cohomological obstructions I encountered before a priori, I have to use the flat topology to compute them because that's the way it is. And it's only in case I know that my groups are smooth that I can pass to Etard cohomology where I know a lot of things. And I think in general there's really close to nothing known about the flat cohomology of algebraic groups. So this is the reason I really have to avoid those places. And residue characteristic 2 here is also what accounts for the number 2 in theorem 1, which of course has gone. It's the reason I have to invert 2 in this theorem. So then, using these slightly weaker results, the same ideas again work to reduce my approximation problem from one on the unitary group to one on this particular integral model of an anisotropic torus. And this is something which I found surprising, that approximation. So remember, I treated the case of a trivial one-dimensional torus over there using class field theory, but it seemed to me these ideas don't work any longer. Approximation for this particular torus seems to require that K be equal to Q. That's unfortunate for me, but it's so. This still suffices to treat the cases which are demanded by this hope for application of Shimura varieties in the context of the KN local sphere, because there the CM field was imaginary quadratic. Accordingly, its maximal real subfield was Q. But I was really surprised to see that for such an easy torus, I mean, it's one-dimensional, I could not solve the approximation problem over an arbitrary number field like I could for GM. So, okay, there is some application, but that's not so important. So I would stop here, the mathematical part of my talk, but of course, since this also ends the official part of the conference, it's my pleasure to thank the organizers for organizing. Thank you.